You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 61, Exploding Washing Machines. Today on the program, we talk about the Samsung class action lawsuit and optional or suggested recall from Samsung regarding a series of top-loading washing machines that have been exploding, causing great harm. The U.S. elections are coming up next week, and we kind of get into a tirade about that. And also, Intel processors. When is Apple going to leave them? And what Mac would be the first to get Apple-made chips? And now the show.
Yes, so here we are again. They say 2016 has been a really awful year, but I don't think it's quite been as awful for anyone as it has been for Samsung, at least in the category of corporations. Their recall for the Note 7 obviously is still ongoing. As of now, they've said they've recalled 85% of all the devices in the U.S.
No, is that all?
Yeah. Yeah.
So no, it's nothing.
Yeah. There's still 15% out there, possibly ready to explode at any moment.
And speaking of explosions, now they're washing machines. They're top-loading washing machines.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm trying so hard not to laugh.
Mm-hmm. But. Yes, their top-loading washing machines are now being officially recalled after reports that they explode. Essentially what happens is there's a metal rod that holds the drum assembly together. And I think it was like, there was some kind of flaw in its design or it was defective or something. Basically it ends up snapping and the entire drum assembly launches out the top of the machine, which as you can imagine is not good. One person has actually suffered a broken jaw as a result of this product.
That's clearly
defect.
Awful.
Yeah.
So now there's a class action lawsuit against this.
Naturally. And they've recalled approximately 2.8 million washing machines in the U.S. Samsung Canada has announced that anyone turning in their washing machine will get a free repair or a voucher towards a new washing machine. It's not quite, we will give you a new washing machine. But then, at this point, how can we really trust anything Samsung makes? I mean...
Well, I don't know if you can.
Yeah.
I mean, they certainly haven't proven that they can make reliable products. Not lately, anyway.
No, it certainly seems that way. And especially something like a washing machine, like... Phones are incredibly complicated, so it's entirely feasible that, yeah, something could go wrong. And, I mean, you're strapping giant lithium-ion battery packs in there, and those are never good under the best conditions. So, there is kind of a pass there where it's like, yeah, these things can happen. Washing machine, though. That's technology that hasn't really changed for 100 years. Or, actually, no. When was the first automated washing machine invented?
Good question. I don't have the answer.
I actually have no idea. But certainly a lot longer than smartphones. So, for them to now have built another machine that just irreparably fails and can theoretically cause human injury, and in fact has caused human injury, is alarming to say the least. I mean, in just the span of a year, I mean, less than a year even, a couple of months, we've now had two extremely critical Samsung hardware failures. So... One incident I could maybe understand, but two, I realize they're not the same departments, but I think this perhaps speaks to a deeper issue with Samsung management. I think maybe their tendency to want to rush products isn't limited to smartphones. I think maybe they're a little cavalier with everything.
And do you think it's really that simple of a problem, though? Is it just a matter of the need to get products out of the door quickly? Or do you think that there's more a deep-seated issue with the way they design and develop products and test products?
I think it's unfair to say that they're incompetent. I don't think they are. I think the people that work at Samsung are very intelligent. Obviously, this is a failure of testing and a failure of proper procedure when dealing with safety regulations. And that can only come from the top. So, I don't know. It's just really odd. And hopefully the company is doing some soul searching right now and saying, what's wrong with our process that we're allowing these things to slip through? How can we make it better? How can we ensure that our products ship with zero catastrophic flaws?
I don't think testing would have... I mean, testing may have uncovered the potential scenario where this could be a problem, but everything that I've read so far about why they're actually failing tells me that this is something that should have been addressed during the development of the product. Mm. This should have come up during the engineering of the product.
Yeah.
They should have anticipated
that. My thinking is that someone almost certainly did, but...
You think maybe somebody shrugged it off, said, well, you know, most people will never do that, so it's probably not going to be an issue.
Yeah. I think they probably cut corners that way. It's like they maybe do due diligence, but when it comes to actually shipping stuff, they're like, well, almost nobody would do that, so it's probably fine. Instead of going, oh, well, that could be a real problem if somebody did that. We should make sure that that doesn't happen. So I think there's probably this culture of irresponsibility at the company. And I mean, the fact that two very different divisions have had similar incidents that both kind of tie back to the development and design phase, it suggests a larger problem with the company overall. And I mean, that can only really be a climate of cutting corners and not being fully responsible about issues that are discovered and wanting to save money, ship sooner, et cetera, et cetera. And maybe they thought that was fine because nothing really bad had happened for the longest time. But those choices, those decisions catch up with you because the more of them you make, the more risky your decisions become, because suddenly it's like, well, we got away with this. Maybe it's okay if we do this now. And so it's possible that they just had this escalating degree of ignorance about product flaws until finally it reached critical mass. And now suddenly we're seeing all of these really bad problems with their products because they've just gotten to a point where it's like, well, we want to save all this money and we want to ship on time, so they explode randomly. Whatever, it's fine. I mean, I don't think it's quite that irresponsible, but it's like all the parts aren't quite meshing the way they're supposed to. Like the process by which they create products, there's some inherent flaw in there now, and they need to course correct, or this is just going to keep happening.
So I just want to actually mention this because this is important. in the official press release released by Samsung, they're saying specifically that they're recalling certain washers manufactured between March 2011 and current production dates. That's a huge time span of machines that have this problem.
Yeah.
That's really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, but that's
especially if they've had reports of this issue for a long time, which is probably what the class action is about. It's probably something like, well, they've known about this for years and they haven't fixed it.
Well, what's interesting is that the very top of the...
And, I mean, Samsung's not the only one guilty of this either. Like, I think it was Ford. There was that problem with the brakes that would have cost 6 cents to fix for each car.
Yeah.
Like a 6 cent part would have fixed it. But they said, no, that's a lot of money. We're not going to do that. And then like 30 or 40 people ended up dying as a result of that problem or something.
Yeah, that was bad. But at the beginning of the press release, it actually says this is a voluntary recall. How could it be a voluntary? This is a really serious issue. When the top
your
of
washing
your
machine explodes, may explode. Well, bring it in if you feel like
there
it.
There was one report of somebody's garage wall where the machine was just basically like imploding after the top blew off.
Oh my God.
So I don't think this should be voluntary. I think this should be mandatory that you get your damn machine replaced.
That's crazy.
And stores, like if you bought it from a local store, they should be calling. Like Samsung should be contacting retailers, asking them to call the customers and get them back to the stores.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know if they need to replace the whole machine or they need to replace certain parts, but whatever needs to be fixed should be fixed right away.
Yeah.
If you have one of these, go and check Samsung's website to make sure that it isn't one of the ones that needs to be recalled. And if it is, you should really get it fixed right away.
Yeah. And also, if you have any other Samsung appliances or hardware.
In fact, I just take every single Samsung product you own and just throw it in the garbage.
Yeah, just throw it in the river. Don't throw it in the river.
Actually, I have a Samsung plasma TV. It's been great, except recently I've started to see notice dead pixels in it.
Yeah, that means the plasma is trying to escape and it'll erupt into a giant fireball.
Because it doesn't like me. That's why it's trying to escape.
Yeah. It'll just vaporize in a giant fireball that destroys your home. You know, product oversight, oops, are bad. But yeah, this obviously is very, very serious. People have been hurt and it's not good. So if you have a Samsung washing machine, again, please go online and check to see if yours is affected or not. It is only the top loading ones. So if you have one with a door on the front, it's probably fine. Although who knows, we could find a catastrophic flaw in those too. The year is still not over yet.
That's true. You have
still
a couple months to go.
It's still regrettably 2016, everyone. We have 2 whole months for everything to go horribly wrong.
On that happy note.
On that happy note, the election is this Tuesday. Woo!
Yes.
Oh, God.
Have you been following the results in all the different states?
Oh, God.
The quote-unquote...
538.
What's that term that they use for the... I'm drawing a blank.
The...
Swing states.
Oh. Yeah.
Ohio. What's going on with Ohio? Do you know anything?
Well, I mean, it's looking like Ohio
The polls closed
Trump.
Yesterday for Ohio around 7:30, I think.
Wait, what? They already voted?
I thought they voted yesterday.
No, everybody votes. Everybody
but they have early voting.
Tuesday.
Many states have early voting.
They have early voting, but early voting is for people to submit ballots like by mail and whatever. Like they can vote like way ahead of time.
I see.
And only some states offer that. Some states don't have early voting, and so everybody has to get in line. And of course, in some of those states, which are controlled by Republicans, they've enacted terrifying voter suppression tactics. In North Carolina, for example, a judge just ruled that the state had illegally removed people from voter registries, and they must restore them before Tuesday. So there's that. And, I mean, if it's happening there, I'm sure it's happening elsewhere, which should terrify people. Because, I mean, your vote is your voice. Your vote is deciding how the next 4 years of your life will play out, potentially. And to rob someone of that choice is despicable. Especially when the reason behind it is, oh, so my candidate will win. I mean, that's really what's going on here. If everybody other than white people voted, Trump would lose 100%. So the Republican strategy at this point is basically keep as many non-white people from voting as possible. They've even said out loud that that's what their plan is. There are articles, there are tapes of them saying this. Like, as bad as Harper was, it was never that bad here.
Sure.
Like, no one openly talked about doing anything like that. Like, ugh. And I mean, it's like, it shouldn't surprise me, really. Like, this has been going on for years. They do it every time.
One thing I can't get over, though, which has been unprecedented, is that Trump keeps insisting that the system is rigged, the election system is rigged. The level of collusion that he is getting at is so...
And
first of all, there's no evidence. Second of all, what he's suggesting is so unlikely.
And yet he encouraged his own supporters to commit voter fraud.
Did he?
On several occasions.
When did this happen? What did he say?
He asked them to vote twice.
But you can't do
to
that.
To make sure that their vote would be counted.
Yeah, but how do you vote twice? You can't do that.
Yeah, you can't. It's voter fraud.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. He's just pulling stuff out of his butt.
Yes.
Why am I surprised? Why am I? Of course, that's what he does.
Why are you surprised?
That is what he does.
That's his MO. Yeah. So, but of course, he never advocated voter fraud. He just wanted people's voices to be heard. How dare you insinuate whatever? We have you on tape. Like, this is what blows my mind.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter what's on tape. He'll just say, wrong,
right,
wrong.
Right. That's what blows my mind, though. It's like, we literally have him on tape saying things. Why? Like, I really blame the media for this. This is just the worst part of it all. They're treating him like a normal presidential candidate. They're acting, they've been acting this entire time like Hillary Clinton and him are equals. And they fucking aren't at all. But they continue to insist that they are. And yeah,
the thing is that what I'm hearing from people, this was on the NPR Politics podcast. They were talking about this week, that apparently there are a lot of Trump supporters that factor in his background as a non-politician / billionaire entertainer, and that they're giving him a pass on a lot of these things because he isn't presidential, that he's coming across as the change maker. You know, that he is going to shake up Washington, flip it upside down. And and his rhetoric is very strong and it resonates with a lot of angry people that do want change.
You know what an upside down Washington looks like?
Something from Stranger Things?
No, even scarier. Nazi Germany.
Oh, really? How did you come to that conclusion?
Well, because it's the upside down of democracy.
Okay.
Yeah. Right? Fascism? Yeah. Yeah. It's... And it's been a long campaign. My
16
God.
Months?
Yeah.
I mean, they have that's a whole nother discussion. I mean, they're ridiculously, absurdly long election process.
Especially...
I don't think... there is any other country in the world that has an election system that is that long.
Nope. Not a single one.
It's always, and for good reason.
It's always like 3 or 4 weeks tops, like a month, maybe. That's about it. I think some countries even do it in like 2 weeks. It's like first week campaign, second week voting. Yeah.
I know it. Trump has said that Hillary doesn't have the stamina to be president, which I know is obviously ridiculous, but to do a 16-month campaign, you need stamina. Like, I'm surprised you don't kill over and pass out and after doing that.
She's fucking going to the 9/11 memorial despite having pneumonia. Like, I'm sure doctors were like, no, you can't go to this. You should be in bed. And she's just like, no, I have to. And she still managed to do it. She only collapsed just before getting into the van. Like, Jesus. That takes amazing dedication.
To be specific, she had walking pneumonia, which is a very different flavor of pneumonia from regular pneumonia. Actually, this is kind of driving me nuts that those specifics matter, and so many media outlets reported it as just pneumonia, and it's not pneumonia.
Yeah.
It's very, if you look them up, they're two different medical conditions.
Walking pneumonia obviously is milder, way milder, because you can still walk around. That's why they call it walking pneumonia. Yeah.
By the way, did you see, like, if, you know, this was weeks ago now, but the SNL parody that they did on the, they did actually a couple of them. They parodied, I think, the last two presidential debates with Alec Baldwin as Trump, who did a phenomenal job. And I don't remember the name of the lady that did Hillary Clinton, but she comes out on the stage, like, you know, with the, she's like with the walking cane, and then suddenly and then she does like a flip, and then she's all the energetic. It was just hilarious. Yep. Is so well done.
It's the Willy Wonka.
I think even Hillary Clinton said she caught that and thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
So at least she has a sense of humor. But Trump does not have a sense. Oh, God. That guy can dish it out, but he cannot take it. He's so, he's
his skin,
this whiny baby.
His skin is like cellophane.
He just, anything anyone says, he just threatens to sue them.
Yeah.
And just belittles them and says, oh, well, they're not important, or nobody listens to them. Nobody cares. Jonathan Stewart is overrated. Nobody listens to him.
No. He didn't call him Stewart. He called him by his original name, Jonathan Liebowitz.
Clearly he's not proud of his,
which is like anti-Semitic. Hitler.
Right. Well, even Jonathan Stewart said, I think he's trying to somehow tell people that I'm a Jew. He's like, as if that wasn't obvious by my face.
Yeah. And just the stuff on Twitter has reached terrifying new highs, as always. Just when you think Twitter can't descend any further into hell, it's like, no, we found a new level of hell.
The ninth dimension of hell.
It's like, what, Dante's Inferno, there were like, what, 6 levels of hell? Well, now we're at like level 15 of hell.
That's a lot of levels.
Yeah. The sky's up there somewhere. It's like John Oliver keeps saying, like, just when you think we've hit rock bottom. No, we're actually like somewhere near the core of the earth looking back up at rock bottom. Rock bottom is not the sky.
Just checking NPR's website to see if I can find any sort of highlights on what's going on.
Election. All I can say is it's going to be good to have this finally over with. Though, of course, when Hillary wins, and I say when because duh. Well, I guess I shouldn't say that. Go vote. Seriously, go vote. The entire future of the human race depends on it. Seriously, go vote now. Do it, people.
Well, if you have all early voting and you're,
or actually, well, this will be out on Tuesday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So again, if you're hearing this and you haven't gone and voted, go fucking vote. The world could explode if you don't, unless you're voting Trump, in which case go vote on November 23rd. Though I really don't think anyone that supports Trump listens to us, although I don't know.
NPR did a story today saying the gender gap in this election could be the biggest in at least 60 years.
Very unsurprising.
They said here, history could be made in next week's election, not only in the possibility of electing the first male president, or sorry, let me say that again, the first female president, but in the possibility of the largest gender voting gap in the modern era. Interesting. Women have voted far more heavily Democratic than men in presidential elections since 1996, and the biggest gap thus far has been in 2000, when women preferred Al Gore over George W. Bush by 10 points, while men chose Bush over Gore by 11 points, a 21-point total gap. Big gap.
So I think what this suggests is only women should be allowed to vote because they seem to get it right more.
They're saying that there's possibly a 25-point gap between men and women in this election. They said an average of three recent national polls shows that women prefer Clinton by roughly 13 points, while men prefer Trump by 12. So 25-point gap.
I mean, he's on tape saying he wants to grab them. So, yeah.
Very disturbing.
Like,
very disturbing.
If you're a woman and you support Trump, get the fuck out of here. Like,
well, they exist. There are women,
what is wrong
supporting
with you?
Trump, like the one that we talked about in a previous episode.
Yeah, it blows my mind. Like,
and to actively advertise that you're okay with his potential presidential candidate, you're okay with him grabbing women by their genitals. I can't even process that. I just can't. Just can't.
Yeah.
Do these people even have children? Like, do they think this person is a role model?
Probably.
For their kids?
Probably.
I just don't understand.
Like, if you have to wonder that, it's true. Like, these people are mothers. These people are parents. They have children. They have whatever. They're pillars of the community and so forth. Like, yeah. The new year is going to be very good.
Apple dropping the price on adapters till the end of the year.
Yes.
And dropping the price of the LG 5K display by $384, I think. Which
is quite
a big discount.
I'd like it more if they discounted the actual MacBook Pros.
Yeah, that's not happening this year, Michael.
I know.
Just get over it.
I know.
You're not buying a MacBook Pro this year.
I know.
But it's okay. Next year, new chipsets,
hopefully.
Processors, more energy efficient. Die Shrink, I think, next year with Intel.
Well, yeah, Kaby Lake is
a
Die Shrink.
Was it a 14-nanometer or smaller than that? I can't even remember.
Kaby Lake is 14, and then Cannon Lake is the 10-nanometer shrink.
Right.
And then Coffee Lake comes out after that.
Coffee Lake?
Yeah.
Those are getting
their roadmap is just all lake until 2018. Like, they have no new ideas. It's just lake forever.
By then, like, Apple will definitely have their own MacBook CPUs.
Yeah, like,
that's for sure. That's coming. That's
like,
coming.
This is what I've been talking about with some people. Like, Intel has screwed them so much the past 2 years that, you know, they have the people. I just say, you know what? Fuck it. Just build an x86 A10 chip. They could do it. They have the people.
Yeah, of course.
It wouldn't be that hard. Developers wouldn't have to do anything. They could hyper-optimize it for their hardware. You know? Like, they could just do that. They could build an AD1 chip, Apple Desktop 1 chip. And it could be basically three A10s put together. And it's like 2.5 gigahertz with whatever cache and basically reads like an i7 chip, except it's like way more performant and energy efficient.
I don't know if we've gotten into this before, but the one thing, because I don't understand processor architectures enough, how do you go from Intel to Apple chips and make your software still work without a layer of emulation?
Right. So The thing about different processor types, so you have x86.
Which is what Intel is.
Which is what Intel is and what AMD is. So that's the key thing to remember there. So you have Intel and AMD making x86 chips, and they both work with everything. Because x86 refers to the instruction set that the CPU uses. So the instruction set is basically like the base level machine code that converts whatever programming language you write in is like way up here at the top of the stack. And then that compiles to machine code, which then runs through the processor and translates to like literally binary. And the x86 instruction set is like the base language for the way that machine code works.
So do they just make their own chip with x86 in it? Is that how it works?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, if they made an x86 chip, it would work just like an Intel chip or an AMD chip. It would just be designed by Apple and built by Apple instead of Intel.
What is it about the Apple designed chips that we currently know and understand that are in iOS devices? What is it specifically about the architecture that makes them so much faster than everything else that's out there? Faster than whatever Qualcomm can put out in Android chips?
Well,
is it the amount of cache that's in it? Is it the
It's basically everything. Like, these are custom designed chips that Apple has built with the various experts in their chip design team. Like, they've hired a lot of industry experts. They have people from Intel working for them now. They have people from AMD. They have people from that one company that they bought forever ago, which is what started all of this. At one point, they had Mark Papermaster, who was initially like a really top designer at AMD, and he's now the CTO of AMD after he left Apple. So, I mean, and I've heard this from people in the industry, Apple is actually now considered the place to go if you want to design cutting edge chips.
Yeah, I've heard that from you.
People are actually leaving Intel to work at Apple. And I mean, that brain drain could be even faster now because Intel's basically hit this wall and they're like, oh, we don't know what to do. It's going to be lakes for the next 2 years. Just lake chips. We don't know. So, I mean, they're just kind of circling the drain or whatever they're doing. And Apple, year over year, every single year, puts out a new chip with a new design that's at least twice as powerful as the previous one. Well, I mean, it started out being twice. Now it's like about 30%-ish. But those leaps and bounds still continue to be massive. So, case in point, and this is where my whole Apple should make an x86 chip argument comes from. The MacBook Pro 13-inch without the touch bar, with the 2 GHz i5 chip that has turbo boost up to 3.2 GHz. If you run that through Geekbench and you run an iPhone 7 Plus through Geekbench, the difference on the single core score is 100. And the multi-core score is only about 1,000. A smartphone processor is nearly as powerful as a professional laptop.
It's hard to imagine.
So, I mean, if they made an x86 chip that's effectively a similar design to that, clocked it up to something that a more powerful device could run.
Well, that's what gets me so excited about that, because imagine, like, this is the performance they get out of with the huge constraints of fitting it in this tiny little iOS device with limited space and heat requirements, battery requirements. Imagine all that space in a MacBook. Imagine the kind of performance that they could put in that chip. It would crush Intel,
probably.
And it would crush ARM and crush whoever else
and
makes CPUs.
More importantly, because Apple controls the whole stack, they won't just be able to make the CPU. In the iPhone, they build their own GPUs now, working off of Imagination Technologies Power VR GPUs. They're now doing their own custom GPUs, and they've been doing that since the A8 chip 3 years ago. So they could replace NVIDIA or AMD themselves at some point. That probably has a longer tail because the performance isn't quite there with the GPUs, but CPU, absolutely. And again, because they control everything, they can change the operating system. They can change all of that stuff. They can add custom little microcontrollers throughout the device. And they can just hyper-optimize it to be incredibly good at running macOS and the apps that are on macOS. Because Intel's chips are designed to work with everything. MacBook, Surface, etc. They don't custom build chips for Apple. They build whatever laptop chip, and then sure. Apple says, we'll take 50 million of those.
This is only my pet theory, but I feel like if Apple's going to do this, which I still believe they will, that they would sort of pilot it with the Mac Pro as the starter.
Oh, God, no.
You don't think so?
No. Do you have any idea the backlash that would have? If Apple was like, oh, yeah, we built our own chip. We think you're really going to like it for all that 5K video editing. Well, actually, I don't know. Maybe. Nah.
In a desktop computer?
No, I think to...
Because the Mac Pro has always had this issue of waiting for these Intel
waiting
Xeon
for the Xeon chips.
Think about that. They've always struggled with that.
Okay.
And if that's the biggest issue, that's the biggest delay, why not start with the Mac Pro? And it's like, boom.
I could see that. I would put that at like 70% likely, depending.
Yeah. So what if they wouldn't have the ability to put it in all of their products immediately, because that's a lot of work. Do you think they would start with their laptops?
Yeah, I think they'd either start with the iPad Pro or the MacBook. In fact, I think maybe they would start with...
But they why do you say iPad Pro? That's they already have them in iOS devices. We're talking about the rest of the computers here in their lineup.
Yeah, that would only make sense if they were going to put macOS on an iPad, which no. Yeah. Okay, so probably the MacBook then, because that's like their super ultra light laptop. That would benefit the most from having
battery life.
A really dedicated, super fast Apple chip in it. Because then they could be like, this laptop's as thin as a knife and it lasts for 20 hours and it's basically as fast as a MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
Try and catch us up, Microsoft. Try and do it now.
It would be a good move.
Because, I mean, that's Apple's strength. Like, that's where the real strength of their company is coming from now. Say what you will about everything else that's going on. Their chip team is insane. Every year, they push out a chip that makes every Android chip look like garbage.
Yeah, but Android, okay, we've covered this. Android has other problems with the software
it does,
itself. The operating system.
Yeah, it does. But on paper, the raw performance, Apple just crushes them mm-hmm. every time.
Like, I see you're saying, taking the operating system away from the equation.
Yeah,
comparing the two.
Yeah, just comparing the chip at basic like benchmark stuff. Which I guess maybe the OS plays a role, but not it wouldn't be enough to throw these results the way that we're seeing. Like, the discrepancy is so high, the OS really wouldn't account for all of that. And this happens every single year, like clockwork. Like, every time Qualcomm's like, yeah, the new Snapdragon, whatever. And then Android phones come out with it. And every single time Apple just completely blows them out of the water. Like, like I think it was the Pixel. So the Pixel's supposed to be the latest and greatest phone. It runs faster than any other Android phone, etc. They did that test that they did with the Note 7 against an iPhone 7 Plus.
Okay.
It laps it.
I'm not surprised by that.
These chips are just really bad. And I mean, I'm not the only one who thinks so. Like, Android fans themselves are incredibly disappointed with Qualcomm's efforts. Like, they continually say how disappointing Qualcomm's performance is and how they wish they would make better chips. And like, I've even seen some people basically say they really respect Apple because their chips are actually extremely good and they wish that they could have an Apple chip on their Android phone. So yeah, that's kind of how that goes. But yeah, I think as long as Intel continues to be terrible with all of these delays and everything, and as long as Apple has the people to do it, I say why not? Why not have an x86 chip for the Mac? Because they could do it, and it would be way better than just sitting around waiting for Intel to deliver.
My question is when? Because on and off, we talk periodically. This conversation resurfaces about Apple making their own chips for the Mac and getting away from Intel. But I guess the question is when? When do you get away from Intel?
It's hard to say. I mean, obviously, we don't know what their internal pipeline is like. We don't know if they've already been working on a chip like this. I have heard in the past that they've had MacBooks running on ARM chips. They've had macOS running on ARM. But
it seems like WWDC would be the event they would probably want to announce something like this. The more tech nerdy,
yes, probably
developer savvy, especially developers to know, to reassure them that there's no impact with their apps, that they won't have to recode their apps.
Yeah, that would be my assumption as the best time to do it.
Although I'm wondering maybe if there would be some automatic way in the new version of Xcode where they would have this version of Xcode that just by recompiling your app somehow it would be more optimized and get more performance out of Apple's chips.
Oh, probably. Xcode could totally handle that. Like, because the thing is, the x86 instruction set is the x86 instruction set. If Apple makes an x86 chip, it's exactly the same, effectively. The optimization comes from how the CPU handles that code. So, yeah, I mean, they could introduce some new APIs that take advantage of their chip somehow. Like, they could upgrade Grand Central Dispatch and all of those other core libraries that have been part of macOS for years, OpenCL, all of those things. And then it could just be like, yeah, just recompile your app, resubmit it, and it'll work like at least 40% better or something. I don't know. But yeah, like, in theory, developers wouldn't actually have to do anything because the chip would respond to the compiled code in the same way or a similar way to the way an Intel chip would respond.
Right.
So in theory, there wouldn't be any issues. Obviously, they'd have to do a lot of testing to make sure that's the case. Or at least provide an easy path for developers to migrate their apps.
Right.
At the very least, it would be far simpler than the PowerPC to Intel transition.
Oh my God, yes. With that Rosetta emulation stuff.
Yeah, there'd be no need for that. It'd just be like, well,
I mean, it was what it was. I mean, it was a necessary thing. And it could have been worse, but.
And for those that remember their Apple history, a similar pattern begins to emerge. They actually left PowerPC for Intel because PowerPC failed to deliver chips.
Yeah, they couldn't keep up. Same thing with Intel.
Yes, exactly.
So Intel, I don't know what's going through their mind.
If they can't get their shit together, Apple will replace them.
I wonder if they're even worried about that.
I don't know.
I mean, they must be aware of what happened between PowerPC and Apple. They must be looking at what their internally, their own issues and going, shit, this is history repeating itself.
Well, the thing is, their issues are their issues. Like, at this point, the roadmap is Swiss cheese. Like, they have just completely shit the bed on everything that they were planning to do.
But Intel will still be in business if Apple dumps them. I mean, because they make...
They are a pretty
PC
big client, though.
Processors.
They're a pretty big client.
I mean,
client.
Certainly, like, they're going to lose a lot of money.
If you look at PC shipments, Apple's at the top. Or they have been for quite a few quarters.
Right. Anyway, so this is obviously
history.
Not something to be taken lightly by Intel at all.
I mean, obviously, HP, Dell, they're still around. Lenovo, they still make a lot of PCs. So... Intel probably doesn't need to be super worried, but their revenue would go down by a considerable amount if Apple stopped buying their chips entirely.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it wouldn't be great for them, but it wouldn't be like a killing blow or anything.
Yeah, it wouldn't be like catastrophic or anything. No. I mean, they might have to lay some people off, maybe.
It's possible.
How many billions of dollars they'll use every
year. And then they'll go work for Apple and make more
awesome
chips.
That's true. That's very true. Well, why don't we end there?
All right.
You've been listening to The Impromptu on Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton. To show your support for this podcast, please become a sustaining monthly donator. It is the best way to show your support for what we do on this podcast. And you can do that now by going to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate a buck or two or whatever you feel comfortable with it. It really does help us cover our costs, like our hosting and server bills and all that fun stuff that is necessary to bring you this amazing show every week. Subscribe to the show and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast player of choice. We're available pretty much everywhere. We're in Google Play Music, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and pretty much everywhere else you can think of. If you're in iTunes, please take a moment and give us a rating. That helps other people find the show, and it also makes us feel pretty good. Follow the show on Twitter. You can chat with us on Twitter at The Impromptu, or hit up Michael Norton at Zen Impulse, and I am at Zero Distraction. Subscribe and follow us on Facebook and Instagram for other updates. And if you'd like to send feedback to us privately, the old-fashioned way, send us an email to theimpromptu@hologramradio.org.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.